Welcome back. It's Web Wednesdays. I do not have a pizza in my hand, although there was promise of a pizza being sent to me somewhere in the chat room out there. If you do have a pizza in your hand that you are enjoying or some other food item, because I like food, please, by all means, share it in the chat room. Love to see it. Love to live vicariously. yeah, exactly. Love to live vicariously through you. Let's just get right into it, because if you don't listen to me, you'll be listening to my stomach. It is just having a mind of its own. Building a backend with Socket.io and Mongo. So we're going to start now on to the chat application. And this is not your average little chat application, right? We're going to be using Node. We're going to be using Socket.io, Mongo. We've got Express. We've got Jade. We've got all of those key kind of phrases there for you. So we're going to start building the backend. And walking through maybe some of these technologies that you might be familiar with, you might not, maybe you've heard of, maybe you haven't used extensively, maybe you're an expert and you're sitting back there and inhaling the pizza that I desperately want. So what are we going to talk about in this module to give you a sense of what's going to be covered? We are going to talk about WebSockets, which are, they could have a whole day to themselves, really, because they are just a crazy kind of technology that you can use across board on different languages. We're going to talk about using Socket.io to connect users to broadcast messages, receive messages. That's how we're going to get that whole kind of real-time send a message, receive it, send it back, that kind of thing going on. We're going to use Socket.io for that. We're going to use Mongo. So we're going to use one of the document-based database to save messages. And we're going to, go and try to figure out what were the last couple messages that were received and bring those back and start working with Mongo and bring it into our workflow. And so we're going to show you a lot of this stuff using Visual Studio and some of the tools that you can be using there to easily do a lot of this kind of working with these different technologies.
Yep.
So, let's just dive right in into what are WebSockets.
Yeah, so WebSocket, it's a protocol designed to let you do real-time communication between the browser and the server. So we're talking full duplex connections. And what that means is that if you look at the history of the web, it's always been a server-client architecture where only the server sends data and the client just requests data. But with the more advanced modern web applications that folks are building, ideally what you want to do is you want the client to be able to send data to the server without having to refresh the whole page. So lots of workarounds were invented to do this before WebSockets were made available. So you have things like AJAX requests, mm-hmm. You had long polling that you could do. You got all these like crazy ways to get this full duplex connection. But now that WebSockets as a protocol has become mature and a lot of browsers are supporting it, you can just use straight up WebSockets to create a full duplex connection and that'll let you do some really cool stuff like real-time apps and chat applications right in the browser. So if you're wondering, WebSockets are fully compatible with HTTP and they use the same port number 80 that you're used to with HTTP. So if you don't need to worry about firewalls or anything like that. And then what's really powerful about WebSockets is that you can build this real-time client-server interaction with the browser and the server. And Node is especially well-designed to do this, to handle this, because it's very event-based driven. So the minute that there's an event, you can handle it, and the server is constantly looping through all the events that are coming in. So an HTTP request will be handled, as well as a WebSocket message and all of those messages in a way that's non-blocking, so you can keep handling those, and it allows you to build real-time applications. Now, WebSockets is supported by several browsers, including Internet Explorer, which is awesome because that's what we're going to be using. And it's great to have this support in Internet Explorer. And if you're running IE 10 and 11, I believe you should be supporting WebSockets.
So modern browsers.
Modern browsers.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement to say. It's just modern browsers.
Modern browsers.
Yeah, we like to consider that. The one thing about WebSockets I think is really awesome is that it's a protocol that a lot of languages support, right?
Yeah.
So you can use them in a variety of different languages, which also means, you know, taking it one step further, is that you can have different kind of applications or you know, those kind of things talking to each other through WebSockets. So you could have, you know, your Node.js page talking to something else that supports WebSockets, like a Python app or something, a Unity game or whatever, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So because it is a protocol, you know, we're going to show you it, you know, working in Node.js, the WebSocket, you know, that whole idea, you can start connecting anything that has, you know, supports it can basically make that connection if you wanted to.
Now, we won't dive in too much into the details of WebSockets and how the upgrade happens to be able to enable your regular HTTP request to start sending WebSockets. We won't dive into those details specifically. What we're going to do, though, instead, is use Socket.io, which is this really awesome module and library that really simplifies using WebSockets so that we can build our chat application very easily.
Yeah, I think anytime right now that you search for WebSockets, it doesn't matter what language it is, they'll say Socket.io. Even though Socket.io, we think of it as JavaScript, they'll always be like, oh, is there a version ported to this for Python, for this, for another language? So you'll see that term, you know, it's almost like synonymous with it to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, so Socket.io, it's a very simple JavaScript library and Node.js module, so you can use it on both the front end and the back end. And it really allows you to create real-time, bidirectional, event-based apps.
That is
that's a big mouthful.
That's
yes,
a
I know. Real time, we know. Bidirectional just basically means that you could it goes both ways.
Yep.
And event based in the sense that if you're used to events in Node, Socket.io simulates events on both the client side and the back end side, so you don't have to change from the programming flow model that you're used to. Now, it lets you also do these things really quickly and simply. And if anything, you could use Socket.io as a way to standardize WebSockets across different web browsers. Because as you know, different browser manufacturers will write and implement the protocol a little bit differently. With Socket.io, just like jQuery, you can have a neutral base for all the browsers out there.
Yeah, it abstracts all of those kind of differences amongst the browsers.
That's
right. Thank you. Thank you for doing that hard work on Socket.io. Yeah. So we're going to be, you know, looking at Socket.io as a solution in order to create real-time communication in a chat application, right? So I send a message and you're, you know, on another side, you might receive it, save it, whatever it may be, that kind of thing.
So that's right.
Well, let's look at implementing Socket.io to connect send and receive messages.
Yeah, so let's dive right into it. Now, the first thing that you want to do is actually add Socket.io to your package.json. Now, there's different ways to do that. We can do it in Visual Studio, call this install new NPM package, and we're just going to switch to my screen so that you can see me do this. If I right-click on NPM, here's my little install new NPM packages. I can see other NPM packages that are available. I can search for some. Now, there's a ton of packages, so it might take a while to load.
How many packages did we say again?
I don't even remember. Over 81,000. I remember that stat.
Yeah,
over 81,000.
This is what 81,000 looks like.
Basically. It might take a few seconds, but it's okay. We don't need to wait for it. We can also use the command prompt as we did earlier. So if I open up my command prompt, you can see everything hopefully very clearly. If I go into the project Node chat room, this is the project that we're going to stay on for the remaining modules, and that's the one that we're going to use.
Remaining, remained-ish, doesn't matter.
Whatever's left, okay? We're going to use project.
However I can conjugate that verb.
So we're going to jump right into this folder. And as we mentioned earlier, we can just go npm install save socket.io. And I believe, if I remember this correctly, It is, there is a dot. That's something that a little confuses me every once in a while. And here we go. We're installing things. It's going to do a few compilation things. You can ignore the messages. It doesn't really mean very much. But once at the end, we can see that it is installed. And the easy way to check that is if I go back to Visual Studio and I expand NPM, you'll notice socket.io is indeed set up. It's ready to go. Awesome. Cool. So that's the thing that you want to do first. You want to add it. And if you want to double check in package.json, it is there. And you'll notice we are using this version of socket.io. Hopefully it's the right one. I believe it is. But if anything, we can always double check to see if it did modify package.json and run this compare.modified. And yes, it did. It did actually change my socket.io version, something that I just noticed at the moment. So if you wanted a refresher, if I wanted to, I can just go this. Remove that, force it to use a specific version of socket.io just so that we don't have any demo bugs or glitches in our MBA. So if I run this, it's going to tell me, hey, okay, node, it's going to socket.io, and then you'll notice right here, 106 is the correct version that we are using. Awesome, cool. So once we've got socket.io installed, the first thing that we'll want to do is actually go to our app.js file. Now you'll notice it looks very, very similar to the one that gets generated with the Express generator. Mm-hmm. The project in this case is actually generated through the Node tools for Visual Studio. So there's a bunch of templates that you could use, and you can go check those out when you go to File, new project, and you'll see all those different samples. We won't go into it, but you can do that on your own. Now, you'll recognize a few things. We've got our express require. We've got our routing, HTTP path. There's a new line here for Mongo, which we'll get into in a few minutes. And the rest is pretty much the same. It's actually exactly the same. If you like a look at this, it's the same thing that we covered in the previous module. Here's where it gets a little interesting. Now, if you notice, Express creates this app, right? And you can call app.listen, as we do in the REST API example. But in this case, we actually do want control over the server that we're using. So we're going to create the HTTP server ourselves. And the reason we do that is because we do want this server object back. So when I call this function, http.createServer, I can pass it the app, the Express app, and it will handle the all the routes that we've added to our Express app. But in this case, once I've gotten this server, when I go to import socket.io, I'm going to pass it the HTTP server that I want the WebSockets and socket.io library to attach to. That way, it'll attach to the same server that's using the same port, and we won't have to worry about different ports for the WebSockets. It's going to run in the same port. And what this function is going to return is an object that we're going to store in I/O, and this object is going to contain the WebSocket server. Now, this require line looks a little funky. It looks a little bit different than what we're used to. And essentially, what's happening here is that the exports variable is actually a function that takes an argument. So this looks a little bit different. If you remember, in our index.js, we had exports.index, and it was equal to a function. And this, in the case of socket.io, what's actually happening is that exports itself is set as a function. And if you notice, Express does something similar as well. So we can move from that. But I/O is still going to contain all of the functions that we need. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, server, start listening to this port number, and here's my callback. The minute that this callback gets executed, all it says is, hey, Express server is listening. Now, all this stuff sets us up for using WebSockets and socket.io in our existing Node app that we took from the basic Express project, Project 7. It's good so far. Any questions in the chat room?
Nothing so far.
All right. If you got questions, make sure you put them in the chat room. That way we can address them as we go along. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, all connections to my WebSocket, I want to track them. So in theory, when our server sends the file that contains our chat application, every single time that someone gets this, connects to our HTTP server and receives this application, we want them, we want to notify the server that a user has connected in some way. So how do we do that? Well, on every single connection to WebSockets, and we do that by going to io.onConnection, which is this event connection, this event named connection, and it's a standard connection, we're going to say, hey, give me the socket that just got connected. And what we're going to do, ideally, is send them all of the chat messages, but the last 10 chat messages that were saved in our database. And that's what this series of lines of code will do. And we'll get to that in a second. For now, we will just ignore this little line of code.
Just to go back, when you see that, like, IO on, That's a pretty like standard on this event when this event happens.
So we're using Node event emitters that we covered in the first module to handle the connection event.
Right.
And we're going to use that again and again and again.
Right.
So now if you'll notice that we're using IO object here, and it gives us a specific socket. So this IO object is for all connections to our server.
Right.
It's for all WebSocket connections.
Right.
But when we want to do something specific for a specific connection, we can use the socket module, and then we use the same event emitters.
Right.
So all the sockets are event emitters, as is the global IO object.
Yeah.
And in this case, what we want to do is like say, hey, when a user is disconnected from our WebSocket, just say that it's disconnected.
Right.
Now that a user has connected to our socket IO server, mm-hmm. What we want to do is, hey, we want to handle any time the user wants to send a chat message.
Right.
So how do we do that? Well, Socket.io uses a concept called channels. So you can send messages on a channel. So if you're familiar with backend technologies like publish-subscribe message queues or any type of queuing system or channel system, this is going to sound very familiar.
Right.
And you can create as many channels as you want. And every single time that you create a channel, basically what you're saying is, okay, well, when a chat event happens on the chat channel, execute this function. So what we're doing here is we're saying, hey, socket on chat, any chat event, execute this function. And this function is going to take a message parameter. Now, this could be, you can call it data, you can call it whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. It's going to pass this message.
I guess that's a really good question that I don't think it's necessarily something that we talked about. Was just, you know, you said, okay, you could pass data here, it could be a message. So if I'm going to use Socket.io, I could be sending just a simple string, right? Like, hello, how are you? But I could also be sending more complex types of data, could I not?
Yeah, you could send binary data as well if you're interested in streaming binary information. Let's say that you're capturing webcam or video input of some kind, or even audio input, and you want to send that to the server. You can use WebSockets for that. And it actually gives a really good use case that comes to mind. So let's say that you're building a voice communication app
that would send me a pizza.
That would ideally send Stacy a pizza.
A large pizza.
We're gonna keep saying this. We're gonna keep saying this till someone out there sends us a pizza. Oh wow, we've actually got one.
wait, here. That's how I eat, by the way. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's usually a shoveling action. Oh yeah. well done, Barry. Well done. That was awesome. If you ask, you will receive. Amazing.
We're waiting for that. So what's really cool with this WebSocket framework is that you can also send binary data. So if you're building a voice communication app through the browser, and there are ways to do that now with HTML5, which is really cool.
Ooh, HTML is growing up and getting
awesome,
fancy.
Awesome, yeah. So one thing that you could do is you could send these events straight from the browser without having to refresh the page or call the or do like an upload mechanism. You can use Socket.io to send bits of your binary in a streaming fashion. So you can even do like some event processing on the client side before you even send it to a server. Lots of really cool stuff that you can do with Socket.io.
Cool. I just thought it, you know, begged the question. Because it's like, oh, we can send a message. I was like, but can we send other things? Because
yeah,
depending
it's
on what you want to use.
It's not just strings. Yeah. You can pretty much send binary data as well. Now, for the case of our chat engine, or chat room, we're sending text. All right, we don't have any special emoticons, but you can add that to your
that'd be fun.
Chat room project.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Hey, listen, if you do some really cool stuff with this chat room project and you go on extend it and you do a lot more with it, send us a tweet.
Yeah.
Send us a tweet. I'd love to see what you guys build
with
it.
Someone should totally do like smart codes with emoticons.
Yeah.
And then like it just like have random emoticons show up. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Or you could like even make your own emoticon faces. Like, sorry, I'm giving you all ideas of what you could build with this, and we haven't even started. So bad. Let's go back to just looking at what you were doing before, because I'm going to walk through and probably ask 100 questions.
Yeah. So,
you talked about channels out of curiosity.
Yeah.
So the idea of channels is like you could have one big Socket.io object that handles multiple channels, so multiple things I might be listening to. So in this case, for example, if you thought about a chat room, I could be listening to the main chat, but I could also be listening to other private channels. For example, if I was having a private discussion with someone one-on-one, right?
So you can use the same Socket.io module. All right, and when we say the socket server, IO here is the server all up, so it will listen at all. If you say, hey, on chat with the IO object, every single socket that's connected, anytime that there's a chat event, it will go to that callback.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to listen to a specific socket, that's when we go socket.on, and then we're saying chat the event, we only want it to be handled per socket. Now, let's say you want to create a private room. You can just create a unique identifier for your channel.
Sure.
You can do that in another way, say by doing an HTTP request or a submit function, or even by sending a WebSocket to like a commands channel. Like create.
Now you're getting fancy.
Yeah.
Now,
if
now
I really want to just use Socket.io for the whole thing,
you
can.
You're fancy. But yeah, I mean, the private thing would be like if we started a conversation, you'd probably need to know both of our IDs.
Yes.
Probably create, you know, a whole new channel.
Maybe even add sign-in mechanisms.
Right.
And Express has some great modules for that.
Yeah.
So you can definitely check them out on NPM and all that wonderful stuff. In the case of our chat room example, everything...
Back to reality.
Back to the code that we have here. We've only
I wish you could see him. He's just like almost slamming the monitor like,
just like back here looking at this code. It's like, this is what we want, right? Okay, so this is what we have. Okay, so this is what we're going to use. Now, what's really cool is that our chat room is actually going to be anonymous.
Yeah.
Right? So we're not going to handle user authentication. We're not going to handle private channels.
Oh, it's a free-for-all.
One free-for-all.
Yeah, yeah.
A channel that anyone could use. Now, you can build on top of this.
Yeah.
You can add user authentication. You can add private channels. You can use the code base here to go on and do further things. But for the sake of our MVA, we're keeping it simple.
Yep.
So, if you'll notice in this handler for the chat event, I've got some Mongo stuff that we'll cover a little bit later. But the only interesting line here is actually line 74. And here's something that's really cool. I'm calling socket, the same socket that we had a connection to, and I'm saying, hey, broadcast, using the broadcast object, and then emit something.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something that's interesting. So if I just wanted to send a single message to this socket, what I would normally type, and we're going to remove this. All right. Does not want to
run.
Does not want to slow down.
Stay down.
Stay down. If I just do socket emit, all right, and I specify the channel chat,
yep.
This is only going to send it to this specific socket.
Right.
But the minute I add broadcast, it's going to send it to all sockets that are connected to the chat channel, and it's going to send this message to all of them. So emit is the function that sends something. Broadcast specifies every single socket that's connected.
So it's very much that like publisher, subscriber type of mode.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So anyone who's connected to our channel is going to get this message. So if you think of our chat room as one big channel,
yeah.
Anyone that's connected to our chat room will get everyone else's messages.
Yeah.
So right away, within a few lines of code, you can sense that we've already started building this chat room.
Yeah.
And in fact, it seems like it's mostly complete, because now anyone who sends me a message on the chat channel,
yeah.
Everyone else will get it.
Yeah.
So the nice thing about broadcast is it doesn't resend it to the same channel that sent it.
Right.
So it'll only send it to other sockets.
Yeah, so it's kind of doing that smart work for you. It's like, oh, you know, you're sending it. I don't think you're gonna wanna receive what you know you've sent.
Yeah, and that's actually gonna raise an interesting point when we start working on the front end, is that yeah. We also want to show what the user typed in as having been sent.
Right.
And Stacy will show you that in the next module.
Oh, giving me some pressure.
So here we've got our basic chat room. Now, if I load this up, and if I run this, and I clear this screen, and I do node.app.js, okay, you'll notice, all right, okay, well, we're using something that's deprecated, that's all right. Express server is listening on port 3000. So if I go to my port 3000, and I'm going to close this, change this, okay, I'm still listening to my network stuff. Here we are. We have something that looks like a chat room. Welcome to the Node chat room. There's a little message box. There's a little button. Yeah. Stacy will show you how we built those in the next module. For now,
I want more pressure on Stacy. I want more pizza, less pressure.
More pizza, less pressure. Let me show you what's going on right here. So we've got our localhost URL that's being hit. That's the minute that we press enter. It's going to get this HTML. It's getting all this CSS files.
And you're in the network tab of F12 tools.
I'm in the network tab in the F12 tools.
Which, if you've never really dived into the F12 tools, like they've been, I mean, it's such an improvement. And the network tab, once you hit start, you can get everything there. You can,
it's awesome. You can even
really
save.
Good tool to debug.
You can even export this traffic to a file too, so to check it out later. So
cool.
It's really awesome. And now here's something that you'll notice. We're doing some socket stuff here. Right? Now, what's happening is that Socket.io has connected. So if I go back to my command prompt, hey, it'll say, hey, a user connected, and something interesting pops up. It says, fail to connect to localhost. And that's because it's trying to do this Mongo Connect stuff.
Right.
Now that we've covered Socket.io, I think it's time to talk about Mongo.
Yeah. Well, I think actually one thing that was interesting, if we can go back to the F12 tools just quickly.
Absolutely.
Was that, you're seeing those connections there. Okay, back in the day, debugging WebSockets was like throwing things out into, space and hoping someone received it. So, for this is awesome that you actually see like, oh, something's happening here. And, there's possible ways that you can actually see what's going on there.
Yeah.
So just in one more kind of like, for like the network traffic is, you can start to see that like that's being called, maybe something's not going on. But just because you're connecting to something, out there somewhere, you can still kind of see what's going on with it.
Yeah, and you can see it in detail as well, so you can see every single request.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Here's the request headers, the body, what the response was, 200 okay, the content type, even the length of the content. All of that is available to you in the F12 tools.
Cool. So, we saw, an error to connection on, 20121 or something, which, if you don't know, and it's on to our next discussion, is the default port for running Mongo.
That's right.
Right. So we're going to talk next in this module about using Mongo and using basically what a lot of people, NoSQL, NoSQL, however you want to pronounce it, NoSQL database. We're going to talk a little bit about what those are, how they work, you know, a lot of people, depending on what background you come from, you might have been using something that's a little bit more like a relational database, right? So, you know, PHP and MySQL, for example, you know, SQL Server.
Common combination, yeah. SQL Server, C#, yep. ASP.NET, those combinations come together typically.
Yeah, so, you know, there's been a lot of rise in terms of using, you know, these more, I mean, it's a mind shift. Let's just say it's a mind shift when you start using these types of databases. It kind of stands for not only, you know, SQL, right? SQL is the language that we use often to select, you know, get all that, wraps all that knowledge around a database. There's different types of these type of databases. We're going to use one that's document-based, but there's different types, document-based, graph databases, et cetera. Right, there's MongoDB is the one that we're going to use. I feel like it's a very popular combination in open source out there.
Yeah, Node and Mongo have been put together right from the beginning.
Yep.
And the connector for Mongo and Node is fantastic.
Yeah, and you've got once again, there's other databases. So once you start entering into this kind of like area, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. But you know, in terms of, I like to think we're a lot of web technologies, Mongo is kind of the darling. And
there's a new one that we just announced recently too, called Azure Document DB.
And yeah, that's right.
It is awesome. It's a NoSQL database that's hosted on Azure. You just say, hey, start up my database, and you're good to go. You got a connection string. You've got a SDK for Node, so you can use Node to connect
to
it. You got Python. You got ASP.NET and C#. So it's another example of a document.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun to play
NoSQL
with.
NoSQL, yep.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of these have kind of object-oriented APIs, if you want to, you know, call that. So we're going to work with Mongo, and you'll see that things are called documents, and it's the idea that every kind of entry is a document. It's formatted in JSON. You know, you'll start to see what it looks like and the structure. These kind of databases are really good for large amounts of data. They're really great if you want to. I always go back to APIs. I guess it's just because I'm in the land of using so many APIs. But they're really good if you go and you get like a whole bunch of data from an API and you just want to save it somewhere. Like you just basically take your JSON and insert it almost. You know, it's you don't have to do a lot of like massaging that data unless you want a different structure,
yeah,
of course.
They're really great for when you don't want to have a structure to your data or you just don't know what the structure will be.
Right.
So you just use the JSON as is, you just dump it in there. Now obviously there are ways to validate that data, but we won't cover that at all in this MBA. But for the sake of our MBA, we're using the most flexible option that we can think of, and we're going to let you build on top of that and have more structure to the data that you save into the database MongoDB. Now, for example, you could add like a user to the message. Like in our case, we just insert the message straight up. But let's say that you wanted to say, hey, this message was actually sent by this user who was authenticated at this date and time. That stuff that you can add
easily. Yeah.
And yourself as well.
And that's, you know, if you're looking at Mongo, you haven't tried it before, there's a book online that's really good, and I don't think we have it listed in the resources. It's called The Little Book of Mongo. It's written by a guy named Carl Sagan. He's also writing another book, I think, on another one of those little books. Maybe it was for Go, I can't remember. But anyways, it's really like, it's really small and it gives you everything you need to know about Mongo. You know, we're gonna show you just a couple of the basics, and often depending on what you're doing, that might be all you need. If you're doing a little bit more heavy lifting and you need to like do like more advanced searches and things like that, or you know, filtering out your results and things, you know, there's a lot of good information that you can find out there. So, you know, we're going to talk about using MongoDB specifically, right? And, you know, there's a bunch of options that you can use when using MongoDB, whether, you know, it's locally or in the cloud or whatnot.
Yeah, so you can create a Mongo instance on Azure using the Mongo Lab add-on. If you've already got an Azure account set up and you've got some credits perhaps from your demo credits, or you just got a subscription or something, it will just use all of that same billing, so you don't have to worry about having your credit card numbers everywhere over the internet. And what's really cool is that you can also customize and manually use these databases in things other than Azure websites, which is what we're going to use to deploy later on. Mm-hmm. Now, in our case, we're actually going to be using Mongo locally on our machines. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's, you know, I don't know how most web developers work, and I think that it's awesome that you have a DB connection that's maybe set up in the cloud or in a VM or something that you have a string to.
Yeah.
But I know personally, I like to work with things self-sufficient running locally, so that if I am somewhere where my internet connection is not great, I can just be running that stuff locally and testing it, and then it's a matter of just changing out the URI or the string or whatever
exactly.
to the database connection.
And the way that we've set it up in our code is we actually get those from the environment variables. So you are going to set this custom connection string, and I'll show it to you right now. So if we jump to my screen here, you'll notice that there's this little connection string, and I'm using this one because it's the same one that Azure uses. Mm-hmm. So if you use the MongoLab add-on on Azure, you can use the same string. You don't have to change the code base at all. So what does this MongoLab URI look like? Let me show you exactly. But before I do that, I'm actually going to start Mongo so that you can see what's going on. So I've opened up my command prompt, and I've installed MongoDB on my computer. Now, the cool thing is you don't have to do this yourself. You can just use one of the add-ons and just take the connection URI. Mm-hmm. In our case, we are doing this here, and we won't really explain how to install Mongo because we're going to assume that you can just use the one on Azure. But of course, you can look it up.
Installing Mongo is pretty much like installing Node. We had to download something, we had to run the installer, and then we had to add it to the path variable.
That's right.
So pretty much the same process.
So let's show you what it looks like. I'm just going to get it started. It's running now, and you remember if you look at the error port, it's now we have this MongoDB that's saying it's waiting on port 27.0.17. That was the same port that we had an error on, and that's because it wasn't running.
Which is the default port.
That's the default port
that
Mongo
runs.
So now, if I open up File Explorer and I go back into my PC and I do the same thing that I did last time to check that Mongo was, that Node was in our path, I'm going to do the same thing, go to Advanced System Settings, here I am, here's my environment variables. Now, I'm going to go to my path variable and press Edit. Okay, what you'll notice, clearly it was the last one that I had set.
Yeah, you're like, and I need to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, so when I was trying to run MongoD, I noticed that it wasn't in my path variable, but here it is now. Right now, I have the 64-bit version installed, so there's no x86 at the end, and it's linked to the bin folder. So everything is good, everything's running, Mongo is running. If Mongo was not in the connection string, it would have shown up. Now, if it wasn't in the path variable, it would have shown up. Now, I want to actually show you the connection string, and I made the mistake of closing things a little too soon. Let me just get back in there. And here we are. Right at the top, we've got this custom connection string. It's the same one that was in our code base. Now, what you'll notice is that the value of this variable, it's an actual URI. So if you're used to seeing HTTP here, the difference instead is that we're going to be using MongoDB, right? And then we're going to pass it a host, local host, and a path to the database that we're using. And in our case, we're going to use the chat room database. Now, let's say that we weren't using Mongo on the standard port, which was 27.0.17. We can actually set the port that is being used by Mongo. And of course, if you're interested, you can also add a login. So you can say, hey, user, with the password and at this host. Now, we're using the default settings, so it's going to be localhost. The only thing we need to specify is just the chat room, and we should be good to go. This variable will be available to all of our Node processes, as an environment variable. So I'm going to cancel this because I don't want to change anything. Cancel, cancel, close. Here we have it. So what we did, as we always do, is we also have to install MongoDB to our packages. So I did it the same way that I did Socket.io. If you'll notice, it was included in the dependencies. So right away, you can see it right here. Now I should be able to require MongoDB. And the first thing that I'm going to do is, hey, with whatever this returns, I want to get the Mongo client object. And I'm going to store that in the variable Mongo. And I'm going to use this later on. So we go down. Now, I want to tell Mongo to connect. Now, you'll notice that I'm doing this. I'm connecting to Mongo every single time I get a new socket connection. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not ideal, but we're doing it for the case of our code base, just to simplify the code and make it very clear to you. Mm-hmm. But in theory, you should not be doing this each time.
Right.
You should actually be saving that connection elsewhere so that you can reuse the same connection.
Right.
Now, here I am. I've got Mongo connect, getting the environment variable, custom connection string, MongoLab URI, and I'm passing a callback. Now, this callback takes the parameters error and DB. So, in the case of our first time connecting through the WebSockets, there was actually an error. And it gave us this error using the console warn function. Mm-hmm. So you can notice that it was a different, it was using the warn function. It said fail to connect.
It's a little more gentle.
A little bit more
it's
gentle.
It's warning you.
Yeah, it's not like it's error. It's not
shouting.
Death. It's not like
it's not shouting
error,
at
yeah.
you. It's just warning you.
Exactly. So if there is no error, I want to connect to a collection. And the way Mongo works is that you've got a database that hosts all of these collection tables, and inside each collection, there is all of the documents that
right.
belong to this connection. So I'm going to say, hey, connect to collection chat messages. And here's something that's interesting. This is the function that is being called on the connection, all connections. So for all connections, what I want to do, the minute I get a socket, is I actually want to send them the last 10 messages that I receive.
Sure.
And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to get the collection. And in this collection, we're going to find all the messages. We're going to sort them. And if we just leave sort as is, mm-hmm. it will use the descending order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to limit it to the last 10 mm-hmm. That were inserted. So Mongo will... it has every single document in a Mongo collection has an ID.
Yep.
This ID is time stamped. So by sorting it on just the ID, it will actually sort it so that the last 10 messages are the first 10 that I receive. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, stream this data to me. Here's something that's interesting. We're using this new function called stream. And what this is going to do is going to create an event emitter that I'm going to store in the stream variable. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, stream on any new data. Give me this data. I'm going to call it chat. And then I'm going to say, hey, WebSocket, emit chat on this channel, the content of this chat document. So the document that was inserted has a variable called content. And it's going to emit this to the socket that was just connected. And because it's streaming, it will do this for every single document that it retrieves. So every single document will get, a new event will be created for every single document, and it will emit it as it goes on, so piecemeal. So it won't block the event loop, it won't emit, so it won't wait for all the documents to be loaded. It won't block, because that might take time, especially if there's more than 10 documents that you're trying to retrieve. It will just start emitting them at the minute that each one is available. So very similar to our file IO that we demonstrated in first module.
So just to kind of walk through just what we talked about, I've brought it up on my screen. If you're using Mongo, just once you start, that doesn't help you, does it? Once you start Mongo, and you've got it running, you can also access it through your command prompt. And once again, this isn't necessarily a course on Mongo, but I just wanted to illustrate just a couple of these things so that we can explain what that ID thing that you mentioned is a little bit. And in terms, so right now, I'm running Mongo through the command prompt. I can access the databases, so I can go show DBs. It can tell me what DBs I have. So I can say, you know, use Stacy. I want to use a DB I created. We have in some of your code, you say, you know, the db.collection or use this collection. If you haven't created that collection, you try to reference it, Mongo will just create it for you. So, you know, I've already have, I can do show collections, which is like the idea of tables, if you want to call them that. And I can see the collections. And then what I can do is I can say, hey, I just want to know what's in this test collection. So I can go, db.test, which is the name of the collection, and then find. And in find, I could put in any kind of parameters I wanted to put in there, and it will return me what it found. It only found one item. I could, you know, insert an item if I wanted to, but you see that underscore ID item. Let's see if I can just zoom. I probably have to start zoom it. It's okay. You can probably just see that ID number. That's like a random number that, you know, I wouldn't say random, but it's a number that Mongo gives you, and it's by default. If you don't have that parameter, it will set it, but you can also override it and set it as well. So just so you know, you can access, you know, while you're using the stuff and trying to debug, and if you go through some of those Mongo kind of courses, you will see that, you know, you can do it this way as well.
And Stacey, you did remind me of something, actually, well, as you were doing this, is that when we set up our Mongo URI, we assumed that the database chat room existed.
Right.
In fact, we probably should actually be creating that.
Right.
And that's what Stacey did when she wrote use Stacey. Now, if you're using Mongo Lab, the add-on on Azure, you can go through the UI and do that through the UI, so you don't have to connect to it using the CLI. But definitely, thank you for reminding me about that.
There you go.
And now you're able to actually connect to the chat room.
I have made my keep. I've totally made my keep. All right.
So, last thing that I want to show you is, okay, well, we've talked about retrieving all these messages from Mongo, but we never actually showed you how to store them in Mongo.
Right.
And that's the step that I'm going to show you next. So if you go to the socket.on chat channel, so this is going to get executed, this function right here, function with the message parameter, is going to get executed every single time that a message is sent on that channel from a socket. Now, for every single message, we want to store it.
Sorry, one question someone had earlier. Can you just show where that chat channel was created or instantiated? Or is it a matter of you just referencing it?
You just reference it.
So if it hasn't been created or it hasn't been stored or anything amongst it, it's the same thing as Mongo. You reference it and it exists now.
Yeah, in the case of channels, you reference it, the same thing with collections in Mongo. That is correct.
Perfect.
So you don't need to actually create a channel. The minute you start using it, it's going to start assuming that this channel exists. So we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do another Mongo connect so you can see why this could be repetitive. And ideally, in your own code bases, you should extract this out of this this callback for the IO object, out of this callback, instead of put it as a global connection object. But for our case, we won't do that. And this looks very familiar. We're going to check to see if there's an error on the connection. Now, here's where things get interesting. If you remember, DB was passed to us by the Mongo connect function right here. So we're going to use this DB, and we're going to say, hey, collection, get me this collection that's called chat messages, and store it in this variable collection. Now, here's where things get interesting. We're going to actually insert a message into the collection. Probably should have called this something
the collection
else.
Collection.
And insert this JSON object, and you'll notice this is where content comes back up. So if you remember, I said, hey, get me the chat content of this document. This is where we specify it, and we specify it to be the message. And the reason why we have to specify it like this is because Mongo will add a dash ID with some number so that you can reference this specific document. So that's why we can't just insert the message right away. We have to actually set it as a key value mm-hmm. pair in this JSON object. Now, if there's an error that happens while trying to insert this message, this callback is going to get executed with something set in error. If not, it's going to return the actual object, the document itself. So it will re-return the document with you. And then what's special about this document in this case is that the document will also contain the ID that was created for this one, if it wasn't already specified. So that this could be very useful. But in our case, the only thing that we're going to do is we're going to say, hey, chat message was inserted into database, just to tell us that we have actually inserted something.
Right, so you could get that document back and maybe you update it with like the time or someone's username or for whatever
you
reason.
Take the time that was inserted in the database or something and you send that over.
Sure, yep.
Whatever you need to do with it. So now if I actually go back to my node command prompt and I rerun this app, there we go. It seems that I've already put things in my chat and in my chat database.
Yep.
And what it's telling you is, hey, I read the last 10 messages. I'm going to emit them.
Yeah.
So if you look at our console.log, that's right over here. I'm going to emit this, the chat content. And if I go to my Internet Explorer, it actually did emit the chat content.
And that the reason, looks like a fascinating chat.
Yeah, hello world.
Hello world.
Yeah. You'll notice this error right here was because we restarted the server, so it lost the connection for a brief moment.
Right.
But you'll notice it got it back. And as a result, it actually got back through WebSockets the chat that was already in the database.
Right.
Now, I won't demo this part because we're running short on time. And we'll get back to you guys in the next module. I'll let Stacy conclude this one.
Yeah, so we've gone through basically setting up Mongo, using Mongo to save messages, to bring some back. Once again, the code samples are all up on the GitHub, so you can walk through and kind of just say, okay, get used to the syntax that you use when you're using that module that we required to use Mongo. And you can get used to the idea of like selecting items for your collection, whatnot. I highly recommend that if you haven't played with Mongo, install it, play with it a little bit in the command prompt, like insert things, find things, return want, that kind of thing. It'll get you a lot more comfortable with what's happening in the code for sure. And then you can, start to kind of work your way through there. So based on what we did just now, we kind of have that basic backend working. We're emitting messages. What we're going to do is we're going to come back after the meal break, pizza. Yeah, and what we're going to do is we're going to start pizza. Yeah, over here. Can you keep up with me? Can't keep up with me, can you? It's because I eat so fast. And we're going to talk about, so we've got some of the back end stuff done. Now we need to worry about the front end, and we're going to do a little bit of the front end. We're going to walk through quickly just like getting some stuff in there in terms of how does Jade work? What does the syntax look like? Pizza keeps moving. I just keep wanting to grab it. Bootstrap, that kind of thing. Spending a little time on the UI. Pizza. Stay there, pizza. There we go. And, and then we'll continue on that road. We'll wire them all together, and then we'll deploy this stuff and get off and running to the races. So I don't know about you, but I'm ready to have a pizza.
Awesome.
We'll see you guys in about an hour, according to Barry.